Good evening. It's a great pleasure to be here, and I have quite a high degree of hope on some of the outcomes that we'll get from the evening that will support the work that I've been asked to conduct by Secretary of State at DEFRA, Owen Paterson. It's a cross-government piece of work which is looking at how we deliver against our strapline, how we think about the procurement of food that's public sector related, and how we do that in a way that creates healthier population who are impacted the way in which we procure food, so school children, hospital patients, people in prisons, our military and armed forces, local workers in local authorities and things like that. So an important element is about health of society. The other element is about how do we do it in a way that supports an economically healthier and more vibrant farming food supply chain in the country to help with food security, jobs, employment, and the rural economies. That's the mission. And procurement, what's very helpful about this is it, procurement, of course, is all about money. And if you can think about how the money is spent and you can influence the way the money is spent, then you have a good opportunity to draw through innovation and to help create better outcomes. The trick is to spend it in a way that enables those sorts of outcomes. So just again, Chairman, you said a few words of introduction, but I am the Chief Executive of Building Research Establishment, BRE, which doesn't do very much on food or farming. In fact, I don't think we do anything on food or farming. I worked on the Olympics and have done various other things, but why on the earth am I doing this job? Well, one of the things, I was seconded part-time to work for the Olympic Delivery Authority to help develop the sustainability strategy and make sure we delivered it. And after about 9 months, I was asked to lead on construction products as well, which includes getting the stuff onto site, buying it in a way that's European law compliant, and delivering the key targets we had in the Games, which were to be on time, to be on or under budget, to meet or exceed all the green targets we set, to avoid litigation, and the number one priority by far was to make sure that everybody went home every day uninjured and alive. Okay, number one priority. So a big system. And when I joined the Olympic Delivery Authority, I had many more emails saying, don't do it because this is Britain and it will go wrong, than I had saying, go for it, see what you can do. But the outcome, of course, we celebrated on the Games, we met or exceeded all those targets. We finished early. The Aquatic Centre finished a year before the Games started, plenty of time to practice. We came in under budget. We met or exceeded our green targets. We had very little litigation. And most importantly, everybody went home every night uninjured and alive. Okay, so we did it. And what I learnt there was some of it's about the system in how you do the job. Another key element is about culture. So from the top, David Higgins applied this culture to say, that's our system. Let's look at how we have an open culture of drawing through good ideas, applying them on the project, learning by doing and relentlessly improving. And the key secret to delivering the outcomes we did in Britain, which is quite unusual, was that culture, that recipe. Procurement was a key part of my role. European compliance, because it was public sector money, was a key part of my role. I then was asked by the Secretary of State, I have no idea how, about a year and a half ago, to look at forests and woodlands. There had been a bit of issue about the proposed sell-off of the publicly owned forest estate. There had been some very good work done by an amazing panel led by the Bishop of Liverpool to look at the Independent Panel of Forestry to look at some of the problems. And there a couple of problems came out. One was that forests and woodlands were basically not economically vibrant enough, too reliant on government grants for planting, not enough economic vibrancy driving employment growth. That was in turn impacting on the quality of the woodlands, so darker woodlands, less access, less biodiversity. And it was fine that so many people protested at the sell-off of the public woodlands, but when you've got more old people, more obese people, and less active people, it'd be really good too if, in addition to having the energy to press the button to protest, they got out into our woodlands and became healthier and more active. So I was asked to come in and fix those, have a look at how you might fix those problems, to do an independent review. Anyway, I decided right at the beginning, rather than writing a thick report that made recommendations that nobody took any notice of, what I'd try and do is it's obvious that we have problems, you can make recommendations, but why not just get on with trying to fix them? So we had 6 months, we we, instead of calling it a Bonfield review, we called it Grown in Britain, and we gave it a cause, which is creating a sustainable future for our forests and woodlands. And the trick there is all about really economic sustainability first. We recruited many hundreds of businesses, and in fact many millions of people from across the country, into a programme of organisations that shared the interest. And I wrote a report, this is my report, it's online, growninbritain.org. It's very thin. It's very thin. Most of it is pictures. And and most importantly, most of the text describes outcomes that endure. So we finished that in October, and here we are now 9 months on, and the thing's just blossomed. And we've got hundreds of millions of pounds of new investment from the private sector in forests and woodlands. We've had more than 20 million people from the country active in woodlands. And at the end, I have a very small paragraph on recommendations, which are described, wouldn't it be nice ifs? Anyway, it created some outcomes. So then I found myself, I thought I was quite pleased to finish that because I have a company to run. But I found myself back into Secretary of State's office, and he said, we've got these issues around food. We've got all these problems, societal problems, and I want to do it. I want to make it better for farms and food producers in Britain. He's a very passionate man that cares very much about the state of farming and food and rural economy in Britain. So I'm using some of these experiences, applying them to food. And I'm truly independent. I mean, I really have no knowledge of food. I have no knowledge of farm. I didn't have. I have more now. I do have some knowledge of government procurement and how to make it work. And we're adopting the same sort of approach. We're inviting people in, listening to their views, and helping get outcomes. And that's why Dougal and Chairman are particularly pleased to come here tonight, because with this illustrious audience, we're bound to get some amazing suggestions and recommendations on how we make this better. And indeed, I've got three of my DEFRA colleagues here to record some of the content that will come. So I hope tonight helps us deliver outcomes here. Just some other bits of context. I mean, some frightening societal statistics on things. We'll just start with some. 1 million old people are malnourished. 3 million people in the country are malnourished. 25% of hospital admissions are with people that are malnourished. They take longer to heal. Wounds take longer to heal. This is a problem we have in the country. If you look at learning ability of school children, it's materially impacted by what they eat. A good breakfast compared to no breakfast means on cognitive tests you have twice the learning capacity that you do if you don't have breakfast. We're getting increasingly obese, especially with children, and that's going to follow through life, create all sorts of issues there. We need to deal with that. Prisoners really care what they eat, about what they eat. It's the one thing, or one of the things they look forward to. If you feed them non-tasty things they don't like, they misbehave. So do school children, by the way. And so we have a whole array of changing factors that are impacting our society linked to public procurement of food that aren't good. And we have plenty of opportunity to make them better. In all of those sectors, we have some wonderful practice, some really outstanding ways of dealing and ameliorating those problems, but we need them to be widespread and applied across the country. Economically, it's interesting. I mean, an astounding fact that I believe is true. 80% of all the food that's bought in hospitals, 80% is wasted. 80%. So when we're looking at austerity or efficiency in every pound of government money spent, that can't be right. So how do we do that? Look at the waste arisings that occur in the food processing chain in a whole. RAP did some work recently showing 30% of food that was bought was wasted. How can we allow that to happen? So a whole array of issues, economic and otherwise, are a problem. And then if you look at rural communities, I learned quite a bit about rural communities in my work on forestry. You know, you've got communities who are doing wonderful things but could do with a bit of help in being a bit more economically vibrant, bringing through the next generation of talent to work on farms like you were talking about. How do we get more money into those communities to help them do better, create jobs, create wealth, create local employment? So there's the sort of context of factors you want to work in. And although I was quite reluctant to come in and do this job at the beginning, when you know what some of those are and you think you have a chance to make a positive impact, it's motivational. You want to try and make a difference. Just on government spend, so it's a big sector, as you say, George, it's the largest manufacturing sector in the country. And the government spend in that is about 7%. So 7% of the market is influenced by schools, hospitals, prisons, local authorities, central government. As you see there, you can see the distribution of spend. And although it's relatively small, of course, if it's if it's sort of connected to policies and other things, it impacts on how people think, how people feel, how people behave, and how the private sector behaves. And so one of the other things we've been doing with the British Food Plan here is to be bringing in some of the more retailers who turn over more on food and helping them see how, by working together, we can create more impact. Nonetheless, 7% is meaningful. And, of course, many of the people impacted by it are vulnerable or need support. Now, if we go back to the Olympics, so the challenge here is, how do we do something that, unless any of you can give me evidence of, hasn't been done since the Second World War? And that's where you get the array of relevant government departments to agree to buying things in the same way, at the same time, with the same measures. And if any of you in the audience who supply to the public sector, you'll know it's very different working for different government departments. And I've looked for, when you're doing one of these reviews, first thing you look for is evidence of success. So where has it happened? It's like case law. And how can we use that to justify this approach? Well, I can't find anything. Not for 60 years or so. So where's the evidence of how this thing can work? How can you get people really to buy in a balanced way of both price, quality, and other factors that mean you're getting best value per pound and delivering other outcomes? And this is the inspiration, it's the Olympics. So when we had our factors we had to deliver against on the Olympics, and this was the balanced scorecard against which we bought anything. Cost was vital. Every check seemed to be signed off by Gordon Brown, the Chancellor, in the beginning. It wasn't quite like that. Being on time, essentially, we can't be late for the Olympic Games. Employing people and organisations that are responsible in how they employ their own people is an essential part of being legally compliant in the way government procures things. It needs to be a responsible procurer. Environment, so looking at embodied impacts and materials, making sure those materials are sourced in the right way, is a part of the factors you need to think about, and so on. And so we applied this, and the problem we had in the beginning was, first of all, most people said it wouldn't work. Most people you met would tell you every reason why it wouldn't work, and would put all their energy into gathering more and more evidence about that rather than thinking how to overcome it. And everybody thought probably it would cost more. But the reality is, if you employ companies that are responsible for and doing the right things by how they manage their people and look after their people, do you know what they do to you more often than not on a construction project? They do what they say they're going to do. That's really good in construction. It helps mean the amount of rework is less. And on things like environmental impacts, we bought a lot of concrete. In fact, I'll go on to that now. Concrete, for example, grey stuff, liquid form, solid form, you buy lots of it. It helps you build things in the ground above the ground. That's not what concrete manufacturers think, but as a customer, that's what you use it for. When you compete, when you get six of the main companies in the country or international companies competing to supply concrete to the Olympics, and embodied impacts of materials is one of the measures, they compete to make a difference. The way they reduce the embodied impacts is they substitute cement, which is very high impact, a ton of CO2 in the atmosphere for every ton of product. They substitute it with waste materials that takes down costs, reduce environmental impacts. You spend less money getting a better outcome. So if you're innovative, if you stop prescribing what you want and ask questions against a balanced scorecard of factors, you draw through innovation that gives you better outcomes. Sometimes it costs more. Most often you get better outcomes. So that's, if you like, the inspiration evidence that we're taking into what we're doing on the British Food Plan. So the method we're adopting and have adopted, I've been doing this since just before Christmas, I finished July the 15th, is, first of all, what's the balanced scorecard for food and catering in the public sector? What are those array of cost and other factors that must be considered when we're buying food for school children, hospitals, prisons and other things? What's a factor? What are the factors? And then we need to implement it across government and either require it or strongly encourage its use. It needs to be consistent and transparent. It's a bit like the pair of scissors and the red ribbon. You know, if you look at the plethora of guidance, rules, standards and other things across the government, food and catering is quite frightening. It's like a big chaos picture. How do we tidy that all up, bring it together, make it more coherent so that when you're buying or when you're supplying or wherever you are, you understand more clearly and consistently what it is you need to do and how you get better outcomes. Make it easier. Assurance is really important. It's essential that what you're eating is what it says it is and comes from where it says it comes from. And there's been all sorts of issues around that with horse meat and other things, but that's a really important part of making sure we're complying with the balanced scorecard. Piloting is essential because loads of people will give you every reason why this won't work. Okay, there's a real, I don't know whether it's a cult thing in Britain or whatever, but they say people have tried it before, it will never work. There's all these reasons it won't work, just like in the Olympics. Okay, the way to overcome that, and you have lawyers and other people who always tell you about the risks of little things or big things that will go wrong, where you haven't got the evidence to, so you end up not doing anything. So the way we're approaching this is to say, well, we know there are some elements of this that are a bit weak. We know there are some areas where the science base isn't that strong. We can't actually prove the outcomes. But let's give it a go. Let's have consistent ways of measuring, and let's learn by doing. And do it in partnerships of private sector, public sector, suppliers, farmers, and NFUs and other people like that. Share the learning and continuously improve, just like we did on the Games. We've got pilots all around the country, but not in Humber yet. Earl Assell, chairman. No, Lord Haskins. Who's on the local enterprise partnership in Humber. The thing we're just starting to, by the way, if you go and Google British food plan online, you won't find anything, and that's been deliberate. Rather than hyping up people and raising expectation, we've quietly got on with building this thing, and now we're starting to communicate and to get it out there and to make a difference. But the guidance, the tools, the places to go and buy. We're creating an online portal, like an online marketplace, just like we did on the Olympics, where people who want to buy go into, and once people who want to supply go into as well. It's like a marketplace, all British Food Plan compliant, balanced scorecard compliant, so you get the flow of money to the supply side. And the key thing is it's all about innovation. So it's innovation in how you do this. Some of it's agri-tech, transformational innovation, and some is very process-oriented stuff, practical things that allow our British supply chain to be more competitive. So the links with agri-tech, the link with the SBRI, which is the Small Businesses Research Initiative, which pays for small organisations to get funding, is essential. And I'm hoping to, but I'm going to team up with you later, George, because you're clearly an operator. I hope we might be able to get some more money specifically to fund incremental innovation from BIS to support this programme. The other thing we've adopted, in addition to that approach, is this culture. It's all very well having those approaches, but if you don't have the culture we had like on the Games, you're unlikely to get outcomes. So the thing is, like we've grown in Britain, give a vision that everybody believes in and they forget their day-to-day competition with their contemporaries. Get over that. Focus on this goal. Be empowered, get on with the things you can do, stop looking at what other people should do, start focusing on what you need to do. Have a positive critical culture, so come out with the problems and then put your energy into fixing them rather than evidence of why they're not working. Be evidence-based. I'm a researcher, run a research organisation, but that's really important because if you measure things consistently, you draw evidence, you're more likely to get things wrong. Private sector-driven, public sector-enabled. There is a regulatory element to this, but mostly it's about the public sector enabling innovation rather than prescribing and blocking innovation. The other thing is it's long term. So we set up a number of groups. They have a till 2017 plan. So this thing is set up. It's got momentum. It's critical mass, and it endures, and it has clear measures of success. This is our scorecard, top level. It has cost. You see at the top in red. It has production, so how the stuff's produced. Health and well-being, all the things around nutrition and impact on society. Resource efficiency, that's not just waste, that's also water and energy. Socio-economic factors about how you employ people, fair trade, and quality of service. You know it counts whether the food's hot, how it's presented, what it tastes like. It's a key part of the experience of and the success of food, and that impacts some of these other factors. So that's our ballot scorecard. Underneath that, we've built a scoring matrix, which is practical and applicable in procurement, and we're getting on through our pilots to look at those things. Pilots to date are in these places. I hope you can see some of the ticks, an array of prisons, schools, hospitals, driven through the local enterprise partnerships who are concerned about those things and local growth. And also now from the private sector has started to pick this up, voluntarily adopt the balanced scorecard and apply it in their projects. These will be our learning by doing. With the mayor, we're running a competition to do two boroughs in London at the moment. And then we have these working groups established, all chaired, that will endure for the next 3 years or so, looking at how we enable innovation. So innovation, assurance, food producers, we're meeting with them tomorrow, local enterprise partnerships and public procurers. This is our public procurement team. So you have policy and procurement leads for all these places who have worked as a team to produce the balanced scorecard. That's fairly unusual. We have an innovation action group. It's chaired by Stephen Walker, who's the chief executive of Camden BRI Research Institute. It has other research institutes on. It's got the Technology Strategy Board and BIS on. That's about identifying the more incremental innovation needs and getting them funded. These are some of the priority areas they're looking at. So the place we're at, we've got like 2 months to go now. We've achieved something I thought would be impossible actually at the beginning, which is we've actually got government departments, officials and secretaries of state and ministers mostly, nearly, hopefully, right, aligned on doing this, buying in a consistent way to deliver the outcomes we're looking at. I didn't think we'd do that. We're in there. We've got these various groups together. They're working. They have an ongoing program. We've got the pilots in place. We're just going to start pushing on those. We're now going to start going public with our guidance and tools and standards. I have more confidence, much more confidence than I had at the beginning, that this is now going to make a real impact. And what I really hope will happen tonight is you'll have a bunch of really good ideas and criticisms about this program, but I hope we can draw some of those out so that we're in better shape to deliver some outcomes that are meaningful and which endure. Thank you very much.